Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 21st of June 2019. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. And your readers today are Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Frieda Bates.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are Threatened Village Shop Set to Reopen, Civic Chiefs Reveal Plan to End Rough Sleeping by 2023, and Pensions Changes Hitting NHS Care. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Daphne?
A post office and village shop in Hampshire are set to reopen at the end of this month after the community rallied together to save them from closure. The village store and post office in Hursley will once again come under one roof and will reopen on June the 30th following a £25,000 revamp. As previously reported, the owner had announced last May that he intended to close the shop. The shop was relocated to the nearby Dolphin Pub, while the post office was closed in September. However, the community stepped in, setting up the Hursley Community Shop Association Limited, HCSA, and raising more than £100,000 to buy premises and businesses in December 2018. Now, Councillor Edward Heron, Executive Member for Countryside and Rural Affairs at Hampshire County Council, HCC, has granted HCSA £11,000 to complete the refurbishment. Once complete, the group will hold an official opening ceremony on June the 30th, with both the post office and the shop reopening to the public from July the 1st. David Killeen, a member of HCSA, said, "It's very exciting at the moment. Work is continuing and we are optimistic." He said after the decision to close the shop and the post office was announced, residents decided to become shareholders and raised money to save the premises. "There are elderly people who still rely on the post office and everybody thought it was very important. It provides a place for people to go and have a chat. It forms a much more positive centre of community spirit and togetherness," he added. County Councillor and former City Councillor Jan Warwick was one of those who campaigned to save the premises. She said, "The purchase and continued running of the Hursley Village Community Shop demonstrates the fundraising commitment of the local community and the efforts of local volunteers. I was pleased to be able to contribute towards essential equipment from my County Councillor grant, and we are very grateful for the significant financial support from Hampshire County Council's Rural Grant Programme and DEFRA's Field Fair grant." Councillor Warwick added, "Both grants have made an essential contribution towards the cost of refurbishment and the imminent reopening of the post office and village shop." The opening ceremony on June the 30th will start at noon and refreshment will also be provided. Commenting on the HCC grant approved last week, Councillor Heron said, "I am particularly pleased with the good uptake of the Parish and Town Council Investment Fund and the Rural Communities Fund. These funds provide communities with the financial means, in tandem with their own resources, to develop new and innovative ways of working to address local needs and build their resilience. Priority will be given to projects that directly support pressures in key service areas and to initiatives that draw in partnerships and resources in a sustainable manner." And that's accompanied by a photograph of Councillor Jan Warwick and everyone else standing outside the Hursley Post Office with its bright red sunshade, and it's looking very welcoming.
Civic chiefs reveal plan to end rough sleeping by 2023. Civic chiefs have revealed a draft strategy to help with a commitment to end rough sleeping in the Winchester district within the next 4 years. Members of the Winchester City Council Business and Housing Policy Committee were presented with the initial strategy, which focused on improving communication between support groups, getting early intervention in place, and ensuring there is adequate housing in the district. A report, which went before the committee on Tuesday evening, set out Council has a commitment to reduce rough sleeping in the Winchester City Centre by 2020 and to end rough sleeping within the Winchester District by 2023. All departments and services need to recognise that for us to really understand the needs of those facing homelessness in the district, we need to establish the root cause of an individual situation, consider trauma and multiple needs that are not being addressed, and provide strengths-based approaches to improve their quality of life. It specifically set out 4 priorities. Provide early intervention and support to prevent homelessness, promoting systems change through partnership arrangements, ensuring sufficient supply of accommodation, provide the right support and services so that no person needs to sleep rough in Winchester. And that article is also accompanied by a small picture showing some sleeping bags and belongings tucked in a corner at the top of some steps by one of the streets in Winchester.
Pension changes hitting NHS care. Winchester's MP has told ministers of fears pension changes could impact the treatment of patients in Winchester. Steve Brine, MP, spoke during a parliamentary debate on the future of the NHS. He said recent changes to pension tax legislation relating to the annual allowance and the lifetime allowance have caused widespread concern in the health sector, including at Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, HHFT, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Speaking in the House of Commons, the MP said he'd been contacted by a number of constituents after they received unexpected tax bills of tens of thousands of pounds. Mr. Brine added that HHFT had contacted him to warn about the issue which is impacting patient care, as some medical staff were foregoing additional work because the increase in tax is greater than the money earned. In response, Mr. Hammond said a consultation has been launched to look at proposals which he said would make pensions more flexible for senior clinicians delivering frontline care. Speaking after the debate, Mr. Brine said, "I asked HHFT's chief executive about the issue when I was in recently opening the new emergency department, because I could see from constituency correspondence this was a huge issue for some individuals. But alongside that, I was concerned of a possible trust-wide impact, and Alex Whitfield confirmed the pension situation is having a significant impact on their people. Ministers need to move fast on this to ensure we don't lose good and experienced medical staff. I have already followed up with the Secretary of State and will keep very close on the issue to ensure voices from my constituency are heard." The debate was held to mark the publication of the Interim NHS People Plan. The document sets out a vision for how people working in the NHS and recruited to it will be supported to deliver world-class care. Mr. Brine welcomed its publication, which he said was the turnkey without which the NHS long-term plan cannot work. Responding to Mr. Bryan's comments, a spokesman for HHFT said, "The national income tax and NHS pension situation, which has been widely reported, is such that a number of senior clinical staff are effectively taxed at over 100% for additional work. As a result, a number of clinical staff are choosing to reduce their hours, retire early, or stop working additional sessions. Unfortunately, there is already a workforce challenge in the NHS, and finding other people to fill these gaps is increasingly difficult. This is resulting in longer waits for patients who are not in need of urgent care, but do require NHS treatment."
That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Aylmer Hall, Martin Aylmer Hall at home. Boylan, Michael Boylan, at Southampton General Hospital after a short illness, aged 85. Massey, James Alexander Massey, peacefully at Moorside Nursing Home, aged 91. Mayors, Lieutenant Commander Walter Joseph Mayer, MBE, RN retired. Petford, Brian Petford, peacefully aged 86. Sims, John Harold Sims, at Southampton General Hospital after a short illness, aged 87. And Templeman, Michael Francis Templeman, suddenly while in holiday in Spain, age 66. Christian comment this week is read by Daphne. Thank you, Daphne.
And Christian comment comes from the Reverend Philip Crinks, and it's headed "The Task of Rebuilding." Society is in disarray. Catastrophic misjudgment has led to political disaster. The capital city is distressed, its infrastructure and defences broken down. Word comes to an exiled leader who vows to return. He will rebuild the walls. Nehemiah returned to Jerusalem determined to see the city restored, beginning with its walls. The temple had already been rebuilt, but the sustainability of the temple depended on the walls. The rebuilding of the walls would in turn depend on the spiritual revival of the people centred on the temple. The fulfilment of Nehemiah's vision required firstly trust and diplomacy. He had to persuade the Persian emperor to give him leave to go and to give him safe passage to Jerusalem. Then it depended on a realistic plan. Nehemiah secretly surveyed the broken-down walls so that he would know what was involved in rebuilding them. When the work started, Nehemiah had to enable each person to do their part for the common good of all. In the face of threats and attacks from other nations, Nehemiah had to show courage and steadfastness and be willing to stand up for what was right and for God's people. In a just cause, Nehemiah told the people, even our God will fight for us. The project of social restoration required also a commitment to social justice. Nehemiah put an end to unfair lending practices. Economic and social justice could not be separated from political security, and neither of those could be separated from a faithful witness to God. While Nehemiah played a pivotal role in rebuilding, he wished only to give the glory to God. The other nations were perplexed. They perceived that this work could only have been accomplished with the help of God. In our own day, the task of laying new foundations and rebuilding social structures is no less pressing. In one sense, it is a practical task, a matter of policy and planning and process, but it is also something more. To rebuild, to build and rebuild a city, to form a vision for community life together, to build something which will last, this is a spiritual task. It requires attention to the deepest human needs and an openness to the loftiest inspiration from above, to the prompting of the Holy Spirit who moves in each one of us. Rebuilding is a task of love and faith and self-control and inspired wisdom. It is a task of liberation and of reconciliation. It is a task of patience and wisdom. But let us be honest about it, it will not be a comfortable ride, opening ourselves to the divine wisdom. It will not be easy to be liberated or reconciled. It will require each one of us to dig down deep, to surface our own prejudices, to confront our own half-truths, which are far from good enough to settle for. Not in our own strength can we do this work, individually or collectively. Like the rebuilding of the walls, it will only be accomplished with the help of God. And that comes from the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is priest in charge of St Faith's Parish in Winchester.
Now we move on to letters to the editor, and the first letter is read by Nick. Thank you, Nick.
This one's entitled Carrot and Stick. Sir, the climate declaration announced by the new City Council administration did not provide specific details as to how this worthy, ambitious and important project is to be accomplished. It is reassuring that members of the City Council, regardless of political persuasion, will work together to achieve the desired results. That was in the Chronicle, June the 13th. There is a balance between maintaining a healthy local economy and reducing the ease of access to the city centre. Many people commute to Winchester by train or car. The centre of Winchester is gridlocked very often during the day, and vehicles produce much pollution when stuck in a jam. There are a number of points that need to be aired to address the issue, short and longer term. 1. Park and ride must be extended dramatically, although currently popular and much used service. 2. Promotion of cycling to the centre, and where possible, create dedicated cycle paths. 3. Ideally, following an all-party discussion and engaging Winchester and district residents and businesses to introduce positive and realistic traffic limitation policy. Nobody will deny the centre is heavily polluted with vehicle fumes. Promoting electric-powered vehicles would also be beneficial. 4. The planting of many more trees and bushes is essential. Trees absorb the very pollutants we need to reduce. And reflecting Del Thompson's letter, trees are part of Winchester's legacy. Perhaps tree planting celebrations. Badger Farm, which was created in around 1981, is one of the finest examples in the country, providing a tree-rich, cleaner air environment. For a relatively modern development, it is a credit to the original planners. Badger Farm must be a rarity with its green and pleasant layout. 5. Last but not least, mass house building that will have a seriously damaging short and long-term effect through not only pollution but the potential threat to woodland. And trees help combat pollution. As a community, we must gather together and promote the planting of trees and protect existing woodland. A carrot will always be more popular and effective than the stick, thus providing a positive incentive for all who care for our precious region. And that letter's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
This letter is entitled NHS Improves, and it comes from Keith Webb of Quarry Road, Winchester. Sir, as I approach my 90th year, I seem to be taking up more and more NHS time, and with my memory not what it was, I very much appreciate the relatively new text message reminders about appointments. We are told that it is very costly for the NHS if appointments are missed, And the second text reminder, sent the day before, is a very sensible and long overdue way of dealing with this. My wife receives her reminders via our landline, and the computer's grasp of names is very poor. She, in spite of answering to Sue, is addressed as Susan. It would be very interesting to hear how the appointments department computer copes with surnames like Featherstone Hoare, correctly pronounced Fanshawe, and Cholmondeley, correctly pronounced as Chumley, or first names like Sian, correctly pronounced Sean.
And the next letter is on the same theme as Nick's earlier one. This is headed Eco-Vandalism, and it comes from Mark Bayliss. Sir, as much as we can all applaud Winchester City Council for its move towards becoming carbon neutral, letters June the 13th, what a pity that our friends and neighbours in Eastleigh are going in the opposite direction. Their local plan, currently awaiting scrutiny by the planning inspector, envisages a 5,200-home out-of-town sprawl that could have been calculated to maximise CO2 emissions. Being far away from all public transport links and other amenities, it would be utterly car-dependent, whilst wrecking the most biodiverse part of the borough. Chris Packham, who grew up in the area, has called it eco-vandalism, and this from a council whose motto is Tackling Climate Change. And that's from Mark Bayliss, Highbridge, Coldon Common.
John Kimber writes about a memorial appeal. Sir, I am church warden at Holy Trinity, Winchester, in Upper Brook Street. In our grounds is a war memorial, but it only has World War I victims listed, and we would like to correct that by launching a plea to anyone who knows of a loved one who lost his or her life during World War II who lived in the parish, so that we can update the memorial. If it is something you can help with, please contact me on 07921 362440. I'll just give you that again. It's 07921 362 440. And it's from John Kimber, Church Warden, Holy Trinity Church, Upper Brook Street, Winchester.
This letter is titled New Religion. Sir, has the climate change movement actually become a new religion? Given the amount of time and energy spent in demonstrating and demanding that other people and authorities do something by declaring a climate emergency, creating an Extinction Rebellion movement, and giving guru status to 16-year-old girls, it might appear so. Its acolytes seem to exhibit some typical characteristics: absolute devotion to the cause, total belief in the received wisdom, complete rejection of even the most rational counter-arguments. And yet, no one would dispute that human beings have been despoiling for centuries this wonderful planet we live on. Over the last 200 years, the scale of this pollution has reached staggering volumes, accelerated by an astonishing increase in the human population, threefold in my lifetime. At the same time, it is clear that the climate has fluctuated remarkably since the last ice age, long before mankind could have had any appreciable influence. And those fluctuations have had major impacts, negative and positive, without much warning. So why is it necessary to waste all that enthusiasm attempting to prove that human activity is the cause of future climate change? They could use their energies instead to lobby for the true cost of that pollution, to be paid by those who created it, ultimately us as consumers. We would refuse or be unable to pay the increased prices, and the manufacturers would have to capture the pollution at source, or switch to alternative products to avoid being put out of business. We would recognise swiftly the options open to us and would migrate to the less damaging options, not least as they would then be cheaper. Then there is the separate matter of changes in climate over time. These will cause calamities for some communities and opportunities for others. An army of researchers currently wasting their expertise trying to demonstrate a link with human activity could be employed to forecast the probabilities of each and putting plans and actions in place to optimise our responses to the most likely scenarios. This letter comes from Terence Wall, Western Road, Chandler's Ford.
And the next letter is from Chris O'Neill, who is chairman of Hampshire Unison Retired Members Section, and it's headed TV Hypocrisy. Sir, can you smell it? The stink of hypocrisy when Prime Minister Theresa May expresses her disappointment at the BBC announcement not to provide funding for free TV licences to the majority of pensioners over the age of 75. It was her government that transferred this unwanted burden onto the BBC. The resultant inquiry was passed into the gilded, safe hands of Clementi and his cohort, with the inevitable result that the necessary funding has been butchered. In these times of ongoing austerity, there appears to be within Parliament and an element of the media, under the tag of intergenerational fairness, an enthusiasm to attack pensioners' rights. Ironic, then, that pensioners are the group that willingly supports their extended family in so many ways, whilst maybe at the same time the most exposed to the crumbling of underfunded public services. I incite my fellow pensioners angered at this decision to share their feelings with their elected representatives, additionally requesting an explanation for the ongoing attacks on pensioners' rights. And Chris O'Neill lives in Monarch Way, Winchester.
Falcons at War. Sir, recently the Chronicle has had several articles and photos of the peregrine falcons nesting on the cathedral. My late husband and I were very familiar with the appearance and calls of these birds, having first encountered them many years ago in an old quarry in Wales, and more recently at Chichester Cathedral. I was delighted, therefore, when walking into the city along Southgate Street, to see and hear an adult peregrine perched on the side of St James's Church spire. Something much more spectacular was to follow, however, since, when returning across the front of the cathedral precinct, I observed a red kite flying very high and being attacked and harried by a peregrine. The larger bird did not want to depart, but after numerous swoops and attacks by the peregrine, it eventually gave up and flew off. I felt quite privileged to see this event, which went completely unobserved by most of the other people in the precinct where it appeared. With so many bird species in steep decline, I would hope that these wonderful birds continue to thrive in Winchester. And that's from Mrs. Michelle Fox-Rousel, St. Cross Road, St. Cross, Winchester.
This letter is entitled No Secrets. Sir, whatever happened to the secret ballot? Asks John Seeger Green, Chronicle Letters, May the 30th. Well, there is nothing new about the process he described, and there never really was any secret balloting. The old-style ballot book counterfoils also always recorded voters' register number, written by hand at point of issue, with voting papers individually perforated for validation. Given that UK voters are not obliged to show proof of identity, as they are in many other countries, electoral services clearly need to have some means of guarding against fraudulent voting, such as personation, and for checking up on misuse of fake identities of living or dead people, which are both criminal offences, if absolutely necessary in retrospect. Remember the 2005 court judgment in Birmingham over a major postal balloting scandal. Perhaps more sinister, though, is that your correspondent's fear, Big Brother, has always seemed to be around, long before computers made things easier for him. He was certainly in full operation when I ran a London polling station and participated in the vote count for the October 1974 general election. After the results had been declared and the speeches made, while helping to clear up, I noticed the police blatantly removing the bundles of counted ballots that had been cast for a Communist Party candidate and having a quiet word with the returning officer. It was clear they were discussing the means to have access to the counterfoils, which would reveal the polling numbers of those voters concerned, thereby disclosing their names and addresses. I found it even more disturbing that the police seemed to have no such parallel interest in the ballots of those who had voted for the National Front's candidate, which were not requisitioned. When I expressed my suspicions about what I had observed to the returning officer, he gave me a dismissive reply, but looked remarkably sheepish. This letter comes from Christopher Gordon of Corns Close, Winchester.
And now a letter from Phil Yates, and it's headed, When a Hollywood Legend Visited. Sir, with regard to Barbara Crabb's letter concerning General Ike Eisenhower's visit to the Matterley Bowl to address US troops shortly before they disembarked to the Normandy beaches on D-Day, that was in the Chronicle June the 13th, I believe the famous American boxer and world heavyweight champion Joe Louis also visited the bowl to boost morale at the same time. I know that the famous Hollywood actor James Cagney came to Winchester later that year to visit US troops wounded in battle at St Swithin's School, which was converted into a military hospital during the war. He stayed at the Great Western Hotel, now the Bishop on the Bridge public house. The licensee at the time, Bert Spicer, told me when I interviewed him some years later. James Cagney also visited the Winchester Brewery in Hyde Street, now Marston's Gate. Obviously, he was keen to sample a glass of good English beer. No doubt plans are well in place for next year's big event, the 75th anniversary of VE Day, which falls on May the 8th, 2020. And that's from Phil Yates of Tower Street, Winchester, and it's accompanied by a black and white studio shot of James Cagney, taken when he was rather young, I would say, but even so, he still looks rather menacing.
One's tempted to say, you dirty rat.
Yes.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Looking back, we begin with news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Nick.
Yes, this is from Monday, June the 21st, 1819. And there's two pieces here. The first one is, yesterday, a large party celebrated the ever-memorable Battle of Waterloo on the Nive, near Alresford, by a dance of nearly 100 couples. The evening was spent with the greatest hilarity. And the second piece, accounts were received on Thursday at Lloyd's of an independent privateer having been lost in the Gulf of Gibraltar near the Spanish coast. The crew, about 70 in numbers, took to their boats for the purpose of escaping to the African side. But by boats pushing out from Tarifa, they were captured by the Spaniards.
100 years ago, Saturday, June the 21st, 1919, there are two pieces from this date. We have at different times referred to the success of Hampshire elementary schools in the competition for essays on birds and trees instituted by the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds. The Society offers for competition two kinds of awards, a silver shield open to schools in the particular county and a gold shield open to schools in all the counties. The children forming a competition team select themselves a wild bird and a forest tree for special study. They make their own observations, and then, on some appointed day in the summer, they write their essay while in school, an hour and a half being allowed for the purpose. Last year's competition was won by Barton Stacey Academy. The second piece. A large number of citizens gathered in the neighbourhood of the London and South Western Railway Station on Monday night to witness the arrival of the cadre of the 2nd Rifle Brigade. A great disappointment, however, reached Winchester as the particular train, due at 10:29 p.m, came in without any sign of a cadre.
And 50 years ago, on Saturday, June the 21st, 1969, we have the following items. Hampshire County Fire Service's workshops at Winnall, Winchester, will get a £13,000 facelift in the interests of both expansion and efficiency if the project is approved by Hampshire County Council's Finance Committee. The estimate, plus the spending of an estimated £1,645 on constructing a new entrance roadway into Winnall Close, was passed by the Council's Fire Services Committee at Winchester on Wednesday. The alterations will mean that firefighting equipment, uniform and general engineering stores, at present separated, will all be under the same roof. These stores obviously ought to be brought together, the County Chief Fire Officer, Mr. E. Ashill, told Wednesday's meeting. The second item, Hampshire County Council Education Committee have decided to adopt the college system of comprehensive education for the Winchester area. They decided this by a 31-4 vote on Thursday, and they will urge the County Council to approve it at the next meeting. The decision came only 2 days after Winchester City Council, who have no powers in the matter, voted against the college system in favour of the alternative 11-18 scheme. But the signs are that the City Council may win a point over the siting of the college if this system is approved by the County Council. The City Council agreed on a majority vote that in the event of a college system, they would like the college sited at the Romsey Road campus, which houses at present the Danemark and Montgomery of Alamein schools. On Thursday, the Education Committee agreed that both these schools should be thoroughly examined to establish which of them would be more suitable for conversion to a sixth form college.
And we have two pieces from 25 years ago, Friday, June the 17th, 1994. The Department of Transport has issued High Court summons for over £2 million in court costs and damages to 76 Twyford Down campaigners. The surprise decision has caused shock and dismay among the anti-M3 activists, who are accusing the government of stifling future protests against their road building programme by intimidating the Twyford Down campaigners. Lawyer Philip Leach of Liberty, the Civil Liberties Pressure Group, which is defending two of the campaigners, said the Department of Transport court action was forecast to last between 9 and 12 months and will cost the public purse an inestimable amount. Summons have been sent out since the beginning of the month by Department of Transport lawyers to 76 named protesters. The first indication since last summer that the government department intends to see their two-year-old lawsuit out to the bitter end. Mr. Leach said, "It is a surprise that they have sent these summons out now after doing nothing for so long. But this case will be very important for us to take up as we will be defending the right to protest." The lawsuit has provoked controversy because it treats protesters and damaged property in the same manner as those who merely went to the M3 worksite to hear speeches by MPs. And the second piece. The Hampshire Bus Company has failed to act following complaints about smoky exhaust fumes emitting from buses in Winchester, claims a local photographer. The Hampshire Chronicle has photographic evidence that at least two single-decker buses, which frequently drive along St George's Street, leave a burst of smelly, smoky diesel fumes as they go past. Jeff Beale of Egbert Road Hyde was so concerned about the fumes, which can be a health hazard, that he contacted Hampshire Bus 3 weeks ago. He was thanked for bringing it to their attention and was assured that action would be taken. The company said all buses were smoke tested every 4 weeks. However, this week Mr. Beale saw the offending buses, numbers 156 and 183, still churning out smoke. Asked why he was so worried about the problem, he replied, "How would it affect you if you had a lungful of smoke? People who suffer asthma must be badly affected, and there are a number of food shops in St George's Street. I saw one bus this morning and it was still belching out smoke."
Hampshire Chronicle comment this week is read by Frieda and will be followed by First Person, read by Nick. Thank you, Frieda.
The comment this time is headed, "Welcome Reopening of a Village Shop." There was a time when every village and even every hamlet had a shop, even if it sold odds and ends from the front room of someone's house. Times have changed, and now it seems every shop in the countryside faces an uncertain future. They can survive and even thrive if they are run by the right type of person. Hard-working, dynamic, gregarious, someone in tune with customer demands. They cannot compete on price, but there are plenty of other ways to lure people inside. The ones that have battled to the third decade of the 21st century have been the strongest, but the shadows of closure are always there. So the Chronicle is happy to report the news from Hursley, where villagers have united to raise enough money to secure its future. The County Council has helped with an £11,000 grant to complete the refurbishment, and the shop is due to open on June the 30th. It is worth pointing out that the campaigns, such as Hursley and earlier at Sparsholt and Broughton, are in places that are relatively wealthy and rich enough to back such an enterprise.
Yes, the first report is called Cracking the Housing Crisis, and it's by Joanna Lewis. "I prefer my rain purple, as in the song by Prince, but it's gone a new colour with the wettest June on record in some areas. Last week, Chinook helicopters had to rescue people in Lincolnshire. A month's rain fell in one day. Trains beached in mudslides trapped passengers for hours. Flaming June? More like flaming hell. Yellow rain warnings are the new norm. This Met Office invention means expect transport issues, inside-out umbrellas and head-to-toe lorry spray. It should also include a warning about wardrobe malfunction. On Monday, I started out for central London in a crisp jacket, slingbacks and summer flares. I arrived in shoes that had not only changed colour, but now squeaked. My trousers were so sodden I felt I had weights round my ankles. I was as shapeless as a plumber's toolkit. So now I commute disguised as a reservist for the Royal Marines. I carry a rucksack with energy bars and a torch I can strap to my head. Still, things could have been worse. I could have fallen into the Solent, where last week it was giving off more of a greeny-brown warning. Levels of nitrate were so high that, had I gone for a swim, I would probably have become inflammable. Pollution from new housing and farm fertilisers prompted five councils to suspend all planning permissions unless they are nitrate neutral. Portsmouth, Fareham, Gosport, Havant and East Hampshire councils should be applauded. On the theme of water, there are also new concerns about the latest potentially catastrophic threats to the River Itchen. Adjacent ancient woodland from the massive housing and road developments planned by Eastleigh Borough Council could also be devastated. Meanwhile, there's a drought forecast, and we've learned adults now ingest plastic equivalent to a credit card each week. This is the moment for all councils, including Winchester, to suspend planning permissions until climate emergency declarations are transformed into policies that stop developments threatening the environment. It means facing up to the inconvenient and difficult reality that we do not have a housing crisis that can be solved by building lots of new houses, big or small. To do so will simply make things far worse. Our councils have been at the mercy of national quotas for housing, which arose from the then local government secretary Eric Pickles and his 2011 practitioner advisory group, described by one commentator as a builder's ramp composed of Taylor Wimpey and others, making a citizen's arrest for the damage inflicted one would be too good. Our local design statements were torn up and councils put on warning. Either build thousands of houses or build thousands of houses. Green belts, once sacred, were up for grabs. Sustainable development meant making massive profits. This hasn't solved the housing needs of large numbers of ordinary people trapped by high rents and frozen wages, unable to live near their places of work, or where they and their families have lived for generations. We don't have a shortage of housing. We have people unable to buy what we have. What to do? Well, the wealthy who shifted into the rental market need more incentives to release properties for sale, such as government bonds or rewards for divesting into socially responsible local startups. Mega cities like London and other urban centres need to green up and be community driven so more families settle rather than commute ever sillier distances. Locally, the tricky empty housing problem has been allowed to fester. 8,000 across South Hampshire last year, 1,000 in Winchester. Any new homes should have to show a positive contribution to reducing global warming, from design to the amount of green space. Local skilled workers and small building renovation companies should have business tax breaks so that conversions, extensions, solar panels, more south-facing windows, insulation, triple glazing, rewilding, etc. tackle climate change by harnessing our famous entrepreneurial spirit. Mother Nature doesn't do colour-coded warnings, but the weather has spoken. We are on notice.
Belgarum's alternative look at the news this week has only one item, and that will be read by Daphne. Thank you, Daphne.
Yes, Now, this is headed, "Like Swallows, Crop Circles Mark Arrival of Summer." And the piece is accompanied by two pictures of crop circles, which I'll describe at the end of the item. As the crops grow, the makers of crop circles are out and about. These two photos show new circles in the Winchester area. One is near Oslebury and the other at Littleton. Both pictures were taken by Matt Adamiak using an aerial drone. The origin of the circles was a genuine mystery until the early 1990s, when two Southampton pranksters, Doug Bauer and Dave Chorley, revealed how they had created hundreds of them using a plank and a piece of rope to tramp down the crops after an evening spent in the Percy Hobbs pub at Maughan Hill. Some researchers say the circles can be made by freak weather or even by extraterrestrials. So, the two photographs, they are the most elaborate circles with geometrical precision. And it's not just circles, it's circles broken off, half circles, all sorts. And it reminds me of the spirograph set that my children had when they were young a long time ago. I just cannot understand how anyone could do this with just a plank and a piece of rope. So, who does them?
This week's announcements begin with some events that will be happening in and around Winchester in forthcoming days. The Sarah Morgan Memorial Concert will take place in Winchester Guildhall on Sunday the 30th of June from 2 till 5pm. This will feature choirs from Hampshire with an enduring connection to Sarah. Tickets cost £5 on the door and can be purchased in advance on 07764 794 764. That's 07764 794 764. Also on the 30th of June at 6:30pm at St Paul's Church, Full Flood, Winchester, Camerata will be joined by French harpist Solène Grand in a concert including works by Debussy, Vaughan Williams and Mahler. Tickets cost £12.50 and can be obtained on 01962 732 487. That's 01962 732 487. On Wednesday the 3rd of July at 3pm in Winchester Guildhall, Winchester Go LD are hosting a visit by the best-selling author Joanne Trollope. She will talk about her writing and be signing books. Tickets, which include a glass of Buck's Figs and a waitress service tea, cost £40. Full details are available from winchestergold.org.uk. The Winchester Festival takes place this year from Friday the 5th of July to Saturday the 13th of July using several venues and including concerts by the Talis Scholars, Winchester Cathedral Chamber Choir, Hampshire Youth String Orchestra, the Royal Choral Society and many more. The full programme of events can be accessed at www.winchesterfestival.co.uk. And the box office for tickets is 01962 857 276. That's 01962 857 276. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 21st of June 2019 at 4:50am and begins at 9:24pm. On Wednesday the 26th of June it ends at 4:52am and begins at 9:24pm. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. And now we begin with items of general news.
The first item is headed Young Voices to Fill Cathedral. More than 200 children from Hampshire primary schools will fill Winchester Cathedral with the sound of music on Wednesday, July the 3rd. For several years, Winchester Cathedral has collaborated with the Pilgrims School and the Hampshire Music Service to deliver a music outreach project, which gives children from primary schools the opportunity to join cathedral choirs for a morning of music making. This year's project has involved Free Grounds, Norwood, Shamblehurst, St Swithin Wells and Wellstead schools, and the music outreach team has been visiting the schools over the last few months to hold workshops in preparation for the big day. The primary school choirs will join with the Pilgrim School Junior Commoners Choir and Winchester Cathedral Boy Choristers on July the 3rd for a celebration of music. Directed by Christopher Burton of Pilgrims and Nick Duncombe, Hampshire Music Service, the choir of 200 children aged between 7 and 13 will perform a programme of music which includes songs from the shows and music from around the world. Claudia Grinnell, assistant organist at Winchester Cathedral, who will be accompanying the concert, will also demonstrate the remarkable range of the cathedral's Father Willis organ.
The title for this one is Hampshire Marvellous Meadows, Not Many Left. Before the Second World War, meadows dripping with wildflowers and humming with insects would have been a familiar sight across the UK. However, in Hampshire, flower-rich grasslands have declined by a staggering 98% in the last century. Meadows are home to a huge range of grasses and flowers, which provide nectar and other food for beautiful bees, butterflies, and hundreds of other insects. In turn, these attract rare greater horseshoe bats and farmland birds, including skylarks and yellowhammers. Unfortunately, agricultural use, including ploughing, drainage and fertilisers, have hit meadows hard. Growing towns and cities have also been instrumental in the loss of these habitats. As a result, most have disappeared from our countryside, and the wildlife they support is in trouble too. Meadows are a key part of our natural heritage. They have inspired people for centuries and are essential to our rural economy and well-being. They also help protect our rivers from pollution, hold together healthy soils that store carbon, and enable landscapes to retain water and reduce flooding. Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust has been working with local landowners to advise them on how to manage the grassland meadows on their patch, whether to protect the wider habitat or to support a particular species. By working together to restore and expand these meadows, we can develop a network of natural spaces to help wildlife thrive. Hampshire's speciality is water meadows, which were traditionally irrigated with river water to maintain good grass for sheep and cattle. They are now among Hampshire's richest places for wildlife. Good examples are the Wildlife Trust's Winnell Moors Nature Reserve and along the Itchen Navigation between Winchester and Eastleigh. These meadows can contain dozens of plant species in just 1 square metre. For the past 2 years, the Wildlife Trust has been working hard to create a wildflower meadow at Barton Meadows in Winchester. This former arable land was secured as a nature reserve during the planning process for the King's Barton housing development. The area is currently a swathe of beautiful, bright, white oxeye daisies.
Classic cars go on tour for charity. Dozens of classic cars drove through the towns and villages of Hampshire before ending in Winchester as part of a new vintage event. The Rotary Tour of Legends saw around 50 iconic models meet at the Alma Inn at Upham. An assorted mix of well-presented classics, ranging from 1914 to 1975, completed the tour, which featured breakfast at Bill Rawl's Classic Car Restoration Factory, lunch at Wellow Golf Club, and static displays at both Winchester Cathedral Close and Salisbury Cathedral. Even the rain did not dampen the enthusiasm of spectators, with the event seeing hundreds of people turning out across the two cities. All drivers paid to enter the tour, along with donations from sponsors, raising £3,000 for Bishop Waltham Rotary. The club will now donate the money between two charities, No Limits and the Society of St James. And there's a very nice picture of, well, I can't tell you what make they are, but they're very handsome cars just turning past the William Walker in Winchester with an enthusiastic crowd greeting them as they leave the Cathedral Close.
And here's a piece about golf, and it's headed Mayor 8 Hits a Hole in One. Mayor Cheeseman has hit a hole in one at the age of just 8. The Alsford Junior member achieved the incredible feat in a practice round ahead of her second competition, the European Junior Golf Tour, at Nailcote Hall, the world's toughest par 3 course. She was awarded a hole-in-one trophy by tour organiser and PGA professional Roger Shutt. 5 days earlier, she was first under 10 girl in her first competition for St Swithin's School, the Independent Association of Prep Schools National Golf Championships. Proud dad Darren Cheeseman said, "An average player has a 12,000-to-1 chance of a hole-in-one, and she's probably the youngest girl in the UK to achieve one. The youngest I can find recorded was 9 years. She practices most days and is determined to become a PGA professional golfer." And there's a lovely picture of Maya accepting her hole-in-one trophy from the tour organiser.
New charity for Vietnam. A new charity to help orphans in Vietnam will be launched in Winchester next Tuesday. English teacher Alan Acton and his wife Nam have started the charity to help the many babies who are abandoned by their parents in a country with no social security. He regularly takes supplies such as clinical thermometers, sanitary supplies, feeding bottles and powdered milk to the orphanages. The launch event will be at Christchurch Road, Winchester, SO23 9SR, at 7:15 p.m. on Tuesday, June the 25th. Tea and coffee will be served.
Restored steam engine back running on railway. A restored steam engine has returned to running on the Watercress line after an 18-year gap. The Uri Locomotive Society, a small charity owning two steam locomotives, based on the Mid-Hants Railway, has completed the work on engine number 506. Test runs have been successful, and the engine returned this month to running on the Mid-Hants Railway between Alsford and Alton. It had previously operated there between 1987 and 2001. She was welcomed back at a short ceremony led by Society patron Mark Collins of Wave 105 and President Bob Ury, grandson of the loco's designer, R.W. Ury. The restoration has involved major work to the 90-plus-year-old machine. And there is a very fine photograph of the locomotive 506 in a delightful sort of green, a rich sort of racing green livery, and steaming away, waiting to start work. It's a very, very nice picture.
And now, something on the same theme, although in miniature, Festival of Toy Trains, Alsford. Young and the old enjoy toy trains. Collectors from across the country travelled full steam ahead to Alsford for the annual Festival of Toy Trains. The event, now in its 27th year, was held at Perrin School and saw a bumper attendance, with guests invited to look at the 25 toy train layouts. One of the most popular was the Lego layout, which also had a vast collection of bricks for people to play with. Adults as well as children, I assume. Hornby, O-Gauge and Dublo were well represented. A special O-Gauge school's locomotive that was repainted as St. Trinian's had many admirers. Playcraft railways and highways were celebrated 50 years since it stopped manufacture, and the Bowman Group had a live steam model running. There was also a rare chance to see Hornby's 3.5-inch gauge Stevenson's rocket. And that's accompanied by several very nice photographs of different train layouts. There's a Hornby Dublo layout with all the rails, the stations, the vehicles all around. There's a Thomas the Tank Engine layout, a Playcraft layout, and a Lego station made out of Lego bricks. And finally, a picture of a very crowded hall with several quite small children who are there. They can hardly see over the edge of the table, but everyone looks to be really enjoying themselves.
And here's an article about children in care, titled Children's Services Rated Outstanding. Watchdogs have praised services for Hampshire children in care. Ofsted graded Hampshire County Council's children's services as outstanding. The service has received the top score across all areas, including overall effectiveness, the impact of leaders on social work practice with children and families, the experiences and progress of children who need help and protection, and the experiences and progress of children in care and care leavers. The Ofsted report, published this week, found that social workers are highly skilled at building meaningful relationships with children. It also highlighted the council's political and corporate support and financial investment, saying it has helped the leadership team to implement an ambitious transformation programme. In the report, inspectors also said, children in care benefit from high quality support, which is making a real difference to their outcomes. Management oversight of practice is clear and considered, ensuring that children's plans progress at pace. Children's lives consistently improve as a result of the help they receive. And that's accompanied by one picture showing a child's hand hanging onto an adult forefinger.
Hundreds take part in Winchester Primary School's swimming gala. Five schools share the spoils at the Winchester Primary School's swimming gala. Winchester City Penguins Swimming Club hosted the 19th gala, attended by 27 schools and 280 children from across the district. Mike Fisher from Penguins said, "We are immensely proud of our involvement in the primary school's gala. It's a great example of the way that a not-for-profit sports club can show leadership in the local sporting landscape and bring together a variety of private and public sector organisations to create a brilliant community event." And there are several pictures. They are all absolutely bursting with colour. There is one very long picture along the length of the swimming pool, and all the children taking part and their teachers seem to be there wearing a very nice blue T-shirt. And then there are pictures at the side showing lots and lots of smally, smiley young people kneeling and really thoroughly enjoying the competition.
City MP visits college on D-Day anniversary. There was a D-Day theme to MP Steve Brine's visit to Winchester College. The Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP dropped in to meet Headmaster Dr. Tim Hands and chat with some of the sixth form boys who will shortly leave the college. He also visited the Fellows Library, to see an exhibition of D-Day charts, documents and photographs. No one is sure how the documents came to be at Winchester, but it's thought possible many were used aboard the HMS Warspite, aboard which the Wickhamist A.S. McIntosh served. Among the memorabilia on display are various pieces of Nazi history, including flags and tiny pocket guides given to members of the Hitler Youth Movement. Mr. Brine said, "It was, of course, fascinating to see the D-Day exhibition this week of all weeks. It reminded us once again what an incredible undertaking it was, and even today, the Nazi icons on display were truly chilling." Dr. Tim Hans said, "It is always good to have an opportunity to meet one's MP, and it's always good to be able to share some of our heritage with visitors." And that's accompanied by a photograph of Steve Brine with Dr. Tim Hans in the Fellows Library, a very handsome-looking room lined with thousands and thousands of quite old-looking books.
The title for this one is Café Famille Plan. Plans have been submitted to create a café and kitchen at one of Winchester's most iconic landmarks. If approved, the proposals would see a portion of the City Mill on Bridge Street transformed. According to the plans, the café would open up a new revenue stream to the attraction, which is managed by the National Trust. In a design statement produced on behalf of the City Mill, a spokesman for Donald Insull Associates said, "The Trust has re-evaluated the commercial potential of the heritage asset in order to increase the revenue stream so as to be able to help fund further repair and flood resilience works, thereby safeguarding the mill's future. To that end, the Trust looked to provide a small cafe with servery and attendant kitchen and Part M compliant WC to the east of the new oak screen at upper ground floor." It also says that flour produced at the mill would be included in the cafe's menu and would also allow the mill to offer monthly baking workshops and collaborate with local businesses. The planning application follows work to strengthen the upper ground floor structure of the City Mill. A decision is due by July the 29th.
Public helped the council with a vision for the park. Winchester civic chiefs gave the public the chance to tell them their views on the future of North Wars Recreation Ground. The park is next to the River Park Leisure Centre, which is due for demolition once the new centre opens at Bar End in January 2021. More than 800 people turned up at a public engagement event at the park on March the 22nd and 23rd. Most users come from the surrounding district and walk to the park and use it for walking, and they greatly value the open space and the sports facilities. They dislike the level of drinking and drug-taking, the town forum heard. Suggested improvements include a path around the perimeter, an outdoor gym, and the retention of a cafe and toilets. Organisers of the park run are keen for the park, for the path, said Susan Croker, who is head of landscape and open spaces. Although the indoor 25-metre pool will be demolished, many people would like to see a new open-air pool and splash park on the site. Others would like to see cultural facilities or the retention of a gym. Ms. Croker said it was clear the park is a vitally important open space, helping people's health and well-being. The consultation has given the council a clearer vision to make sure any changes did not end up losing users. She said, "There are very simple improvements that could be made, such as litter picking and painting park benches. The council is aware of the need to replace the cricket pavilion. Local People's Pavilion Project is fundraising to build a multi-use space for use throughout the year and not just the summer. The City Council dropped plans to extend the River Park Leisure Centre onto the park in 2012-13. following a public campaign.
Fire Eater Review. The Theatre Royal in Winchester has conducted a review after a fire eater was burnt at a talent show. Christy Cullum is still in hospital after the incident at NHS Got Talent on Saturday, June the 8th. In a statement, the theatre said, "After the upsetting incident, we have thoroughly reviewed the incident internally, and an external review has also been undertaken by the Health and Licensing Department of the local authority. That has now concluded as follows. There was nothing about the incident that appears to have been caused or exacerbated by the actions or inactions of Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust or the Theatre Royal Winchester." The statement added, "The necessary precautions were all in place, but live performance with fire has inherent risks, and this was an unfortunate accident. Our thoughts and best wishes are with the performer, who remains in hospital, although we have been informed that her condition is improving."
A memorial service. Barbara Large, founder director of the Winchester Writers' Festival, an honorary fellow of the University of Winchester, died in March after a long illness. Her life will be remembered in a memorial service to be held at Twyford Parish Church next Thursday, June the 27th at 3:30 p.m. Friends and colleagues are invited to Shawford Village Hall for tea and cakes afterwards.
Major repairs. Civic chiefs were seeking more than £700,000, as the Chronicle went to press, to carry out major repairs in Winchester city centre. The figures were revealed in a report that went before the City Council's Cabinet yesterday, outlining the repair work needed along the weirs. It stated that £725,000 was required for the remaining three phases of repairs to the river bank to avoid footpaths collapsing. It follows councillors setting aside nearly £40,000 in December 2017 to complete the first phase. The scheme will eventually see the bank between Bridge Street and Wharf Mill repaired. According to the report, the work is needed as some of the timber piles protecting the footpath have rotted away, with the river eroding voids beneath the footpath. It says the first phase has now been completed successfully in a project managed by Hampshire County Council, who are contributing £50,000 to each of the four phases of work, although the final two payments are yet to be approved. When the work is carried out, footpath closures and diversions will be required. The funding request was expected to be approved.
Police seize 15 vehicles from showman's site. Police have seized a number of reportedly stolen vehicles from a travelling showperson's site north of Winchester. Officers recovered 15 vehicles from the site off Basingstoke Road near Mitcheldever, several of which had been reported as stolen, according to a police spokesman. It follows Winchester City Council officers attending the Carousel Park site on Friday. The police spokesman said, "Officers from our Country Watch team recovered several vehicles reported as stolen. Officers were accompanying Winchester City Council officials on a visit to Carousel Park in Mitcheldever on council business at the time. The vehicles have been seized. No one has been arrested." The spokesman said the seized vehicles were 10 caravans, a motorhome, two transit vans and two water bowsers. Their estimated value is around £250,000. And that's accompanied by a photograph of two of the caravans, which look very smart and quite new, being taken away on the back of trucks.
Beaver Scouts helping out at City Prison. 18 beavers and their adult leaders from the 11th Winchester Beaver Scout Colony turned out on Thursday evening to support the prison in driving up standards and demonstrating the strength of support in the local community as staff and leaders within the prison continue to work to turn the jail around. In January 2018, after a difficult couple of years across the prison service and challenges with recruitment and retention of staff locally, HMP Winchester was placed in special measures. Susie Richardson was appointed as Deputy Governor in July and joined by a new Governor, Jim Bork, in September. Ms. Richardson says, "Not only are the efforts of the local beaver colony valuable in terms of the practical contributions they made in tidying up the entrance and external areas to the prison, but such a visual demonstration of how the community of all ages is keen to support the prison and staff in the challenging work they do." The prison benefits from over 100 volunteers going in weekly to help with serving teas for prisoner families, supporting family visits, local Samaritans, AA, CA, NA, and independence monitoring. One of the wings is specifically designed for the resettlement of Hampshire men, and we are receiving increasing support from local business people and interest from Winchester Rotary Club, giving their time, skills and experience to help prisoners prepare for successful release. The prison is keen to hear from people in the local community who represent minority groups to volunteer to give independent scrutiny to ensure that neither prisoners or staff risk suffering from an unconscious bias in decision making.
Developer's Drive. Winchester Chiefs have approved a £50,000 expenditure on improving the driveway at Week Community Centre and a local play area. The money comes from payments from developers under the Community Infrastructure Levy. The town forum was told the money would also pay for improvements to the playground at Taplings Road. The work may be done this summer, but there is potential for it to slip. Councillor Anne Weir welcomed the scheme.
Blue Apple supported by Waitrose. Winchester-based charity Blue Apple Theatre has benefited from the kindness of shoppers at Waitrose. Performers from the company, which supports people with learning disabilities, collected a cheque for £320 raised through the store's Community Matters scheme. Shoppers used tokens to vote for nominated charities to receive a share of a monthly pot. Blue Apple manager Simon Morris said, "We are all very thankful that Waitrose selected Blue Apple to be one of its featured charities, and extremely grateful to all the shoppers that chose to support us. Every bit of funding we receive is vital to help us to continue to support people with learning disabilities to improve the quality of their lives and have access to the same kind of cultural opportunities that other people might take for granted." The charity, which will celebrate its 15th anniversary next year, now operates a number of groups across Hampshire, with a particularly extensive programme in its hometown of Winchester. The various Blue Apple groups seek to support people with learning disabilities at a number of distinct levels, from First Steps drama activities that support personal development through to professional careers. Many of Blue Apple's members perform in large-scale theatre productions in an ambitious mission to promote cultural inclusion in mainstream venues. This included staging Shakespeare's The Tempest at Theatre Royal last week. And it's accompanied by a photograph of Clodagh O'Reilly from Waitrose Winchester presenting one of those outsized cheques to members of the Blue Apple Theatre Company.
One's titled Festival Defies the Weather. Revellers braved the overcast weather on Saturday as they gathered at North Walls for Winchestival 2019. This year's Family Festival saw some of the biggest acts in the event's history perform across the day. Three stages were set up for a mix of music, comedy and children's acts, with the Magic Numbers headlining the main stage. A new BBC Introducing Solent stage debuted this year, with comedy stalwart Zoe Lyons making an appearance and DJ Alistair Whitehead getting the crowd bouncing. Following a successful event, organisers have now announced plans to expand. They have teamed up with Guildhall Winchester to run the Indoor Music Festival, which will be held on September the 27th. Headliners include Mystery Jets, Bash and Temples of Youth, with more to be announced. Tickets can be purchased online, and it's accompanied by a photograph of the main stage at the event with some people with lots of overcoats on by the looks of it watching the performance. I think it might have been raining.
Objections to changes at Equine Charity Base. Plans have been submitted to turn part of Riding Therapy Centre into offices. The proposal for Morland's Copse Farm near Fisher's Pond would see the buildings fitted out as offices, with the Hampshire Riding Therapy Centre charity operating on a smaller scale from an adjacent site. The plans have attracted more than 20 objections, focusing on the impact on wildlife and an increase in traffic. John Beck of Hensting Lane wrote to planners to say, "I have grave concerns that RECAN, who are behind the application, will turn this area of the South Downs National Park into an industrial area." There were no objections from highways officers, providing parking was constructed on site. James Everton, RECAN Managing Director, wrote, "The proposed occupation does not involve access by construction vehicles. We do not consider that there will be a worsening in traffic movements. It is worth noting that the previous use involved larger vehicles. Due to the objections, the application could be referred to committee for a decision." And this piece is accompanied by a splendid photograph of four young women holding and petting a very fine bay horse.
Village pub shuts. One of three pubs in Swanmore looks to have closed its doors for the last time. The Hunter's Inn in Cott Street shut earlier this month after 300 years as a mainstay for visitors. Heartstone Inns, which owns the pub, closed it due to a lack of trade. The company purchased the Hunter's Inn in March last year, with new managers Gavin and Georgia Hawkins taking charge around 6 months ago. The pub was renowned for having sailors visit in the 1960s and 70s. It boasted a garden, a children's playground and a large car park, and was host to meetings for car groups such as the South Coast Muzzers. Two pubs remain in Swanmore, the Rising Sun, a stone's throw away, and the Brickmakers in Church Road.
Conservation officers oppose demolition. A campaign to stop the demolition of a historic Victorian house has won strong backing from a vital planner. The City Council is considering the demolition of Prospect House on Magdalen Hill, the former station master's house for the long-demolished Winchester Chesil Station. Developer Kevin Netherwood of the Clydesdale Group wants to knock down the house and replace it with four new homes. The proposal, largely unheralded until the Chronicle reported it, has attracted 20 objections and two of support. The developer says the proposal would make better use of an underutilised site and create more residential dwellings in a sustainable location. The Council Historic Environment Officer has responded to the consultation. The existing building is considered to be a non-designated heritage asset both in terms of its architectural and historic importance and its historic associations. In addition, the building makes a positive contribution to the streetscape and the overall character of the Winchester Conservation Area. Consequently, I would recommend that the current application be refused, as it will cause harm to the character of the non-designated heritage asset and the overall character of the conservation area, and is at odds with both local and national planning guidance. There has been two letters of support. And this is accompanied by a photograph taken in 1885 of Winchester Chesil Station with a lot of snow lying around and the hill in the background.
Concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet. Thank you.